So you're gonna paint your nails. I need to know how often you do
Yes.
this, because I had no idea you paint your nails when we record.
Multitasking. But yeah, I do it on occasion. Just a little self-care. I just took my vitamins. I'm gonna paint my nails.
Welcome to another episode of True Crime Creepers, where we talk about all the real life creeps, from serial killers to con artists. I'm Kristen, the true crime fanatic who loves to tell these stories.
And I'm Mocap, the true crime newbie who hasn't heard any of them. Oh my gosh, can I tell you what Russell said about me the other day?
Yes.
For the people.
Please.
We were talking about, it was Derby last week, and we were talking about racehorse names, and no two racehorses can have the same name. I think we've talked about this.
Right. That's why their names are so crazy.
Right. And he said, girl, do you know what your racehorse name would be? I said, what? And he was like, she's over it. Because I guess I said, like, yeah, I'm over it. You know what I'm over? And then he covered his mouth and he started doing like, she's over it. Coming around the turn, going over his way. And so now when I complain about something, he does that. He was like,
she's over it. Coming around the corner.
Yeah. That's so funny.
She's over it. Off to a great start. Coming out of the
out of the chute. She's coming around first. What do you think your racehorse name would be?
It is what it is.
Oh, that's a good one. That one's definitely taking that, right? I'm sure she's over it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Coming around, she's over it. Yeah, that is a good one.
So I just got to have a little FaceTime with a fan who actually is my grandma, my favorite person in the whole world. Her best friend's daughter-in-law listens to our podcast, loves it. So her husband like texted me and was like, hey, will you FaceTime her for Mother's Day? Like, she would love it.
What? Is this a cameo? We have a cameo.
Yeah. So I told her because her husband had signed her up for the Patreon like a few days before. And I was like, did he tell you that he signed you up for the Patreon? And she was like, oh, I know exactly what I get. I get a card signed by you. I get a shout out. I get.
I think everyone knows. Yes.
And I was like, excellent. But you know what she didn't realize? She forgot about all the bonus content that we have on the
bonus
Patreon.
Content.
Because on our Patreon at patreon.com/truecrimecreepers, you also get a bonus episode every month. And I think we have like 20 up there now. So you get
20
like
20 months?
20.
Oh my gosh. 4 months.
Yeah, like about 20. Almost 20. Maybe around 20.
August will be 24, right? We've had the Patreon for 2 years.
Almost. Wow, yeah, I know. So there's like 20 full-length bonus episodes that you get them all when you sign up for the Patreon. You get the whole back catalog. And I think we have something like 50 mini creeps. So there's...
Gosh, I'm ready to retire from this gig.
So go over to patreon.com/truecrimecreepers if you want to support the podcast in that way. That would be awesome. But let's go ahead and dive into this week's episode.
Yeah, miss. Don't Google it as you're out here like telling the world.
I'll be right back.
What? Oh, no.
I forgot my fruitcake.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, so sorry. So,
you're going to have to, in that pause, instead of cutting it, you need to play elevator music. Like, cut some of it, but like, leave like 5 seconds and play elevator music.
5 minutes later.
I love that this episode has props.
I know, we might have to make a reel at some point, even though this is what I look like today.
Well, I think it's very rude of you that you did not send me any fruitcake. I love fruitcake. I'm 95 years old. It's like one of my favorite desserts.
So, big thanks to an article in Texas Monthly called Just Desserts by Katie Vine. It was in the January 2016 issue. And I also, there is a documentary on this case. I tried to watch it. It's supposed to be on Discovery Plus. It just came out like 2 years ago, but it is nowhere to be found. I could not find it anywhere. I couldn't even, like, it was unavailable on Amazon, couldn't even rent it, could not find it on Discovery Plus. I couldn't even find a pirated version on YouTube.
Oh, no criminal activity here.
Yeah, so I couldn't watch the documentary. But it was based on the article in Texas Monthly. And I also read like an article from the Collins Street Bakery's like website. So those were both like really great sources. But this is the story of the Collins Street Bakery fraud. And Collins Street Bakery is the world's most famous fruitcake company. And I know what you're all thinking. Of all of the famous fruitcake companies, the Collins Street Bakery from Corsicana, Texas is the most famous?
Yes.
But they don't just sell any fruitcake, right? They sell deluxe fruitcakes, sometimes referred to as the Cadillac of fruitcakes, the Dom Perignon of fruitcakes.
Yes.
This fruitcake is 27% pecans and packed full of fruits like papayas, pineapples, cherries, raisins.
Your grandma's fruitcake.
Bought one of these fruitcakes.
The deluxe one?
The deluxe.
Bitch, if you don't send me a slice of that. Did you have a piece already?
No, look at this puppy.
You about it's to have it still... on air?
I am. It's still
if
in
you don't
the...
send me a piece of that, you can consider our friendship done.
I'll save a piece for you because the shelf life on these suckers is admirable.
That's it. Wedding cake is going to be a fruitcake.
Okay, it better be from Collins Street Bakery because you got if you're going to have fruitcake at your wedding, it better be the Cadillac.
Do you think I should call them right now? Oh, they're probably closed and see if they do wedding cake.
Okay, so I absolutely have to try. I cut a little sliver.
On air?
Yeah.
I can't believe you're going to do this to me right now.
Okay, I've never had fruitcake in my life. This is the thing. My grandma absolutely loved a good fruitcake. Like, loved a good fruitcake. I never got the appeal. She would have it out at every Christmas. Never could try a slice. Could not bring myself to do it.
What is there not to love? Spice, nutmeg, nuts, candied fruit. It's so good.
One thing about fruitcakes, do you know why they have such a long shelf life?
Yeah, because it's like just packed full of like goo that holds it together, preservatives or whatever.
It's salt.
Oh.
It's salt. Great. They're loaded with salt.
Oh, so you let's just pause real quick. I eat on mic and I get flamed and you literally Yeah, go ahead. Eat on mic. Come it's for her neck.
Germane to the episode. Did I use that word correctly?
Why didn't you tell me to order a fruitcake?
It was a I did. I posted on the story.
I didn't know I could have ordered one too.
That is interesting. I can't say that I'm a real big fan of the fruit in the cake.
You better ship that over then. Pack it in your suitcase. Bring it in July. We just sit around after floating the river and eat that fruitcake.
Are you going to be here in July?
My bachelorette party, dummy.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. I'll bring it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I got your fruitcake right here.
Fruitcake right here.
I had to try it.
Well,
that.
Report back. Mm. How do you feel?
Well, it's the best fruitcake I've ever had.
It doesn't sound like that's saying much to you, though. I'll be the judge of that. We make a family fruitcake every year.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes sense that you would be a big fan of fruitcakes because not only are you 85 years old, but you also put fruit in literally everything.
I know. I was just drinking my little mocktail here. It's got chunks of lime, watermelon, and it's pretty good.
Oh, well, the Collins Street Bakery actually got its start in the late 1800s. Whoa. So this is a bakery that's been around for over 100 years by a German immigrant named Gus Weidmann and his associate Tom McElwee. And they were just your average everyday bakery focusing on just baking bread until the Ringling Brothers Circus started coming into town regularly and they'd buy out the German fruitcakes that Weidmann would make every Christmas.
I do think people don't recognize how much German influence is in Texas sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Especially in the hill country.
Yeah, like I know.
New Braunfels and all of that. Yeah, definitely. So because of these fruitcakes have such a long shelf life, that meant that they almost never go bad. They could be shipped anywhere. So when Gus and Tom realized how popular these fruitcakes were, Tom decided to focus on building a fruitcake mail order business. And then in 1946, a man named Lee McNutt, along with two partners, I know.
Sorry.
It's valid. It's a valid giggle. Along with two partners, bought the business and kept this tradition going of mailing these fruitcakes now all over the world. Mm-hmm. Lee's son Bill took over the company in 1967. So this was really like a family run business.
But I mean, that's like early to start mailing stuff all over, I feel like. Like this is like.
They were doing that in like the late 1800s.
That's what I'm saying. Amazon fruitcakes that early on? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I know, but it didn't matter how long it took to get there because their shelf life is unbelievably long. So it was probably one of the few things that they could order like that. I don't know how you get the orders in. I don't know how
mail order
businesses ran. Yeah. So when Bill took over the company in 1967, Bill McNutt, he went even further with it. And he's the one really responsible for turning it into the raging success that it became. He went all in on this fruitcake. He built an entire factory just for fruitcake, a fruitcake factory, if you will. He invested in a computerized system that meant that he could send these fruitcakes to 196 countries.
In the 60s, we had computers back then? I'm not really following.
I don't think he did all of that in 1967, but like while he was the...
Oh, okay. I was like, wait, this is... Yeah, gotcha.
Throughout his reign...
This is his fruitcake
resume.
This
is like what he accomplished. He was a whiz at marketing. He sent fruitcakes to people like Frank Sinatra and the Queen of Spain. And when they'd send back a thank you card, he'd like frame it and put it up on the wall so we could be like, look, Frank Sinatra loves our fruitcake, you know?
Imagine his Instagram, what it would have been.
Right, exactly. These fruitcakes put Corsicana, Texas on the map. People from outside Corsicana started referring to it as Fruitcakes, Texas.
Oh, that's even before Cheer.
Yeah, these fruitcakes became, well, Cheer was in, not Corsicana.
Yeah. Yeah, of course can.
I thought it was in, like, Laredo.
No, that's Navarro is the name of the team.
Navarro. Oh, that's why I was confused. Oh, they're in Corsicana? That makes a lot of sense. Okay, that does make a lot of sense. These fruitcakes became a Christmas tradition for a lot of families. Like I said, I know it was a tradition for my grandma. She lived in Dallas, and so I'm now wondering if, like, her fruitcakes were from Collins Street Bakery. I don't know where she got her fruitcakes from. Maybe somebody that knew my grandma knows where she got her fruitcakes
Someone
from.
Someone report back.
Yeah. This business of fruitcakes made the McNutts very, very rich. In 1998, Bill's son, Bob McNutt, took over the business, and he decided to open three more storefronts around Texas. They were one of the richest families in Corsicana, and they were responsible for a lot of the jobs around the area.
Yeah, that factory.
By the time of the events of this story, which was like, gosh, early, like 2004-ish, 2004 to 2014 time period, they were pulling in $30 million a year in total sales.
And fruitcake. Are they doing anything else?
Fruitcake.
Like, they make donuts. Nuts.
They have, like, other, I don't think they're doing donuts, but they have, like, other, like, cakes and pies and that kind of thing. But fruitcake is their main seller.
Fruitcake
like,
is
that's
king.
Their biggest seller. Yeah. But the town of Corsicana wasn't just all fruitcake money, they also had oil money and cattle money and natural gas money. Oh, this is like
keep talking
Texas,
sexy to me.
Texas money. The picture I got of Corsicana from reading this Texas Monthly article is it's really the type of place where they care about old money versus new money. Like that matters to them. I'm not going to say they as in like all of Corsicana, but there are definitely pockets that are super clicky, super judgmental. And one woman said, yeah, we're mean and gossipy around here.
Okay, Louise, go home.
The same year Bob took over the company, so this is 1998, he hired this guy named Sandy Jenkins to be the accounts payable and payroll supervisor.
Nope.
It wasn't a job that was going to make Sandy rich. It paid $25,000 a year and required quite a lot of work. But Sandy was really devoted to it. Under Sandy, the taxes were always current, the payroll was never late, and Sandy never complained when he just got loaded down with tasks. He even helped the bakery transition into a computerized accounting system, and by 2000, all of this hard work started paying off. He got promoted to corporate controller. So by 2004, Sandy had doubled his income.
Wow.
Of course, that meant he was still only making $50,000 a year. It's not a bad salary, especially for 2004. You know, it let him have a nice historic home, a decent car. He was just your average middle-class American. But Sandy had bigger aspirations, and that $50,000 was not going to give him the status he craved. And Sandy definitely had a taste for the finer things in life. He'd come by it, honestly, from his mother, who ran a grocery store along with his father. His mother had that expensive taste. Sandy said she'd buy poop if it came in a bag from Neiman Marcus.
I love these people. I'm just picturing, you know, I always picture like who it is. And I'm like, I'm just picturing my own family. Like my own aunts, my mom, my grandma.
She loved mink stoles and diamond rings, even though she rarely bought anything so fancy.
That rodeo jewelry.
She would love that rodeo jewelry. But this definitely had an impact on Sandy, and he was even voted most fashionable in high school 3 years in a row.
Whoa.
But his lifelong dream had always been to be a funeral home director. He wanted to be a funeral home director. Not because he was interested at all in like death or the macabre or helping grieving families or anything like that, but because he loved the opulent rooms at the fanciest funeral homes. He loved how sharp the funeral home director's outfits were and how they got to drive fancy black cars and how they were seen as eloquent and revered. Me and Sandy have two different viewpoints of funeral home directors.
I'm just picturing like the Addams Family.
Well, look, I have a lot of respect for the Addams Family, okay? All right. Sandy wanted badly for people to look at him with the respect and admiration that you would show a fancy funeral home director. But he knew he could never get that as an accountant. Don't get me wrong, by all accounts, Sandy's tastes were noticeably refined. If guests came over, Sandy would play pieces like Claire de Lune on the piano while his wife made a delicious meal. Their daughter Allison was studying the culinary arts. They'd won Corsicana Yard of the Month multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't just his job and lack of money that kept him from the status he desperately craved. As Agent Matthews from our McMillions episode would say, Sandy had the personality of a wooden desk. Texas Monthly compared his personality to that of an aged basset hound, complete with droopy eyes and a weak chin. He was pleasant and polite to everyone he interacted with. He was the type that always remembered people's birthdays and important anniversaries. He'd give people compliments on their new haircuts and outfits.
Yeah, but that's not because he cares about them. That's because he's trying to be like, look at me, I'm important, I remember all of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's like his own probably status.
And none of it made any difference. Not like Bob McNutt, who was both extremely wealthy and extremely well-liked. He wasn't the type that flaunted his wealth. He wasn't walking around in flashy clothes. He never mentioned it if he traveled on a private jet. And he was a funny guy. People liked him. They'd come up to his office just to crack a joke or get his opinion on something or tell a funny anecdote. People only came by Sandy Jenkins' office to ask about the various reports that he was responsible for. No one wanted his opinion or to hear his funny anecdotes. Sandy Jenkins was basically the invisible man in Corsicana. No one ever noticed him. People noticed his wife, Kay, though, who they called a hoot and a holler.
Oh, yes.
They loved her sarcastic sense of humor. She definitely seemed to be the dominant one in this relationship between her and Sandy. Even when they first started dating, Sandy couldn't believe that she could ever be interested in someone like him. They had been introduced by Kay's aunt, who was a family friend to the Jenkins, and Sandy thought she was so pretty and vivacious, and it took him a while to get the courage to ask her out. But by 1971, he had talked her into marrying him.
I love that.
Yeah. They started out living in Fairfield while Sandy worked as an accounting clerk for a utility company. But in 1998, Sandy's job transferred him to Corsicana. And right away, they got busy ingratiating themselves into the community. They started attending First Baptist Church, and pretty soon they were members of the choir. Sandy even became a deacon at the church. Uh-huh. Kay worked in the food services at the church. She even started a catering business on the side. They had very comfortable lives. It wasn't going to get them invited to the fancy supper clubs, but it was enough for a two-story historic house with a wraparound porch and white Greek columns in a fine neighborhood with wide streets. They were pretty content. But then, in 1995, Sandy's job was eliminated, and he was totally out of work. He threw himself into work at the church. He did some substitute teaching at the junior high. He helped out with Kay's catering business, but he became really depressed. So much so that after a few years, he was diagnosed with manic depression and he was put on medication. But then, in 1998, he landed that job at Collins Street Bakery, and he'd worked his way up to corporate controller. But by 2004, he was 10 years away from retirement and nowhere near making his dreams a reality. And he was feeling overworked and underpaid. And he wanted badly to be a part of the upper echelons of society. But there was just no way he would ever be a part of that world. The world the McNutts belonged to. The family Sandy Jenkins was working his ass off for. Working what he felt was the equivalent of three jobs. Just for them to be rich and for him to drive around in a five-year-old Lexus.
Oh, no.
He wanted a new Lexus. A new Lexus and fancy designer clothes. So.
I never want that. That's a lot of pressure. I mean, I would take the
Lexus.
And
you got to pay for the premium gas. Like.
Oh. No. I'm not doing that.
And then you buy the fancy clothes and what? You got to like dry clean them now?
And like get them tailored?
Tailored. In December of 2004, Sandy Jenkins decided to take a little shortcut to getting that new Lexus.
Oh, no, Sandy.
It started with just a little dip into the petty cash. It wasn't much at first, and he just kept waiting for someone to ask him about what happened to the money. He was on edge for weeks, but no one ever asked him about it.
Well, how little is little?
I don't know about this part. I know figures from later.
Okay.
No one ever noticed. Not only was he the invisible man, but his crime seemed to be invisible as well. So he decided he was going to get his Lexus, and he knew exactly how he was going to afford to make the payments. He was going to use the bakery checkbook software and just write himself a little check from the bakery. This is very similar to the Rita Crundwell case.
And?
Because Collins Street Bakery also had just one person that approved the claims and wrote the checks, and that person was Sandy Jenkins. So with that plan in mind, he drove to a Lexus dealership in Dallas, traded in his old Lexus for a newer one, still used. He wasn't going all out yet.
Still used.
Gold with tan leather interior, and he was happy and full of adrenaline. And he drove back to Corsicana from this dealership, blasting Barbara Streisand and feeling a sense of power.
Oh, not even Whitney. Before. Whitney Houston is like definitely...
As he drove through Corsicana, he was certain that people were looking at him with jealousy.
Surely.
They were all jealous of him and his new used Lexus. No,
they're like, hey, is that the fruitcake guy? That's what they're like.
Have you, who's that guy? I've never seen him before.
Yeah, that's a fruitcake guy.
But he couldn't tell Kay that he'd bought a new Lexus because she'd ask too many questions. So he just told her that the car had been a gift from the Fishers, who were a couple that he'd done some accounting for and apparently were exceedingly grateful. And Kay apparently won't ask too many questions because she didn't question this story at all. She was just like, oh, okay. It wasn't until the next month that Sandy actually had to follow through with this plan. His credit card bill was due and he was ready to take money that he felt entitled to pay it off. And it was so easy. All he had to do was type out a $20,000 check and make it payable to CityCard. And the software automatically signed the check with Bob McNutt's signature. Mm. And then all Sandy had to do was print the check and then void the check. To cover his tracks, because he was going to be mailing this check in, even though it was voided in the system, he typed the next check for the same amount to a legitimate bakery vendor. But he just never mailed that check. So it would look like, oh, I just made it out to the wrong person. I'm voiding that, tossing that truck, and then I'm making the other one to the actual vendor that I was supposed to make it to. Sandy thought of himself as like sort of a Robin Hood type, you know, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. Only the poor in this case was himself. Yes.
I also don't think you're poor if you've got a Lexus, like, you know, the first one.
Well, in a nice two-story historic home with Greek columns, you're not poor.
Greek columns. Get your Greek columns out of here.
That's one of my favorite lines in Clueless, where she's like, isn't my house classic? The columns date all the way back to 1972.
1972.
And that movie came out in the 90s.
90s, so I know. It's so funny.
And again, no one noticed. Sandy felt elated, on top of the world, and he knew he couldn't stop there. He was going to do this again and again and again.
That's a problem. They get like, you know, it's just this like, I'm just going to try and get away with this like $100, you know, and then, you know, you know, I don't know why I'm telling you, like, you don't know.
Anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with hair care and more recently skincare, but it is so overwhelming. It's hard to even know where to begin. And I hear about all these custom beauty products promising to fix my dry hair and scalp, my damaged ends. But then I find out that after you take some quiz to get it personalized, it turns out they're just sending you some pre-made formula that's not actually personalized. Well, that is not the case with Prose. Prose is here to make all your hair care and skincare wants and needs so easy. And it's actually personalized. Each and every bottle of Prose custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Nothing is pre-mixed and straight off the shelf, and it's actually effective. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, aka the gold standard in research studies, Prose proved that personalization works better than products straight off the shelf. You can try it for yourself and get your healthiest hair in 30 days or get your money back. In fact, Prose is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering our listeners an exclusive trial offer so that you can see the difference that custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/creepers. That's prose.com/creepers for your free consultation and 50% off of your one-of-a-kind formula. Prose.com/creepers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The system was so easy. Each time he'd print a fraudulent check that he'd void out but still cash, he'd then type out a check that looked legitimate for the same amount and just not cash that one. To see any discrepancies, someone had to, like, closely examine the checks, and that seemed unlikely.
That is not happening.
It got to the point, and I don't know over what period of time this particular figure is, but it got to the point where he was stealing $98,000 a month.
Oh my gosh.
From a fruitcake factory.
It's like when you say that, then I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, from the Collins Street Bakery. A bakery.
In Corsicana, Texas.
In Corsicana, Texas. The Jenkins remodeled their kitchen. They installed a wine cellar under their staircase. They started buying $100 bottles of wine.
Okay, wait. But what did the wife, did you already say what the wife is thinking of all of this?
So we don't actually know what she knew, but we know what she knew. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, come on, girl. One Amazon thing shows up here, and I know what's happening.
Like, we'll go into a little bit about what Kay knew, but let me just tell you, Kay was along for this ride. I think that we can see from the things that he was buying, most of it was for her. Most of it was for her. She benefited status-wise. She was into it. She wanted to be in these exclusive clubs, in these, like, supper clubs and these rich people book clubs. We'll get into it, but they joined multiple supper clubs, which I mentioned these earlier briefly, but these supper clubs were basically just symbols of status and money. They were very exclusive. Most of the members had inherited their membership through generations of their family.
Wow. What does that mean? They're eating at like fancy restaurants, or they're like having like dinner at each other's homes? Do we know?
I don't know. I'm sure they're like having dinner at each other's homes, but it's like fancy. It's like for fancy dinner people. Parties. It's not like a dinner party. It's like a event, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't actually know, though. And they didn't just join supper clubs. They also started throwing themed brunches with themes like burgers and Bordeaux, where they'd mix high and low cuisine. Flip-flops and stilettos was another theme. Kay would throw ladies' teas and tell everyone they had to wear a hat. They were throwing these parties like three times a week. And when they weren't throwing parties, they were at the Corsicana Country Club, which they'd go to once or twice a week. But eventually, Sandy didn't really like it there because he didn't find the house wines up to par. And he started bringing his own bottles of wine with him to this country club.
Oh, my gosh. Someone should be like, his checks don't equal what he's doing.
Yeah, you'd think so. And you're just going to think that more and more. Yeah, I know. He had explanations. They're not great, but people bought it. They would tell him that they inherited it, or that he was like flipping cars, or these other weird excuses. They had a rich cousin that was very generous. Like, yeah. His wardrobe also got a major upgrade. We're talking Armani, Hermes, Ferragamos, Gucci. Though he'd tell people he'd bought them all at Walmart, he'd spend his annual salary, over $50,000, on one trip to Neiman's. When he bought five Rolexes there in one trip to Neiman's.
But what's the point of having all the nice stuff if you're telling people it's from Walmart? Like, what's the point of the Ferragamo shoes and then being like, oh, these are from Walmart? Do you know what I mean? Like, isn't the whole point to be like, I'm wearing top of the line?
I think, yes. But I also think for Sandy, a lot of the point was buying it. Like, he didn't really care about it once he had it. He just wanted to buy it. And
like, he didn't care people saw or knew. It was, like, for him.
I don't even think it was for him. I think it was just, like, the actual act of buying the thing. Like, he wanted to go into Neiman Marcus and have these shopping sprees where he's actually buying all this stuff. But then he doesn't actually care about the stuff once he has the stuff.
Yeah. Couldn't like, be me. I'm flaunting it, at least.
Yeah. Their personal shopper at Neiman's got to know them so well that she had personal nicknames for Sandy and Kay. Fruitcake and Cupcake.
Okay. You know I love a good nickname, but that ain't it.
I mean, they're not super creative. Fruitcake, Cupcake. But after a while, she ran out of things to sell them at Neiman Marcus. She had nothing left to sell them. They had bought it all.
That's insane.
Sandy was buying anything and everything he wanted. He'd drive into Dallas for these shopping trips. He'd flip through lifestyle magazines. Sometimes he would have jewelers come to the bakery. These like fancy, expensive jewelers would come with these briefcases handcuffed to their wrists. And he would be at work in his office going like, hey, do you think Kay would like this piece of jewelry from this very fancy and expensive jeweler that I had come to my
my workplace factory office?
Like, come on. They would have an armed guard. He makes $50,000 a year. Nobody's questioning this. Nobody is questioning this. The weirdest thing about this whole thing is that no one really seemed too concerned about where all this money was coming from.
I am.
In the first year of this scheme, this embezzlement scheme, Kay and Sandy flew on a private jet 43 times. They took 43 flights on a private jet to the...
That's not like year one.
Yeah. And I mean, it just continued from there. But that was like $500,000 on private jets.
But that's not like year one stuff. You know what I mean? Year one stuff is like, I mean, listen, I don't know. I sound like I really got it down to an art, but I'm just feeling like you're testing the waters. You're seeing like a private jet 43 times. Like you're maybe taking one trip overseas, like one, year one.
No, they're kind of just flying to like New Mexico and like.
Okay, well, I mean, then I'm done with these people. That's right. Going to Albuquerque. No offense to Albuquerque. I know. But, I mean.
And the weirdest thing about this whole thing was that no one seemed too concerned about where all this money was coming from. Everyone knew that Sandy was an accountant at the bakery. He wasn't exactly rolling in PJ level funds. But they all seemed to just accept the explanations that they were given, which was mainly that Sandy and Kay had been the lucky recipients to a sudden windfall from an inheritance. He also said he was making extra money from contract work on the side. People were also under the impression that he had a super rich and very generous cousin that was always loaning him the jet or loaning him a new Mercedes or Lexus every couple of months. Because I'm not talking about just your base level Mercedes and Lexus. We're talking $100,000, $200,000 cars.
That's
that he's
stupid.
Like trading out every few months.
That's like crazy to me. Like I can't even fathom spending that much on a car. Like even if I'm legitimately rich by my own means. Like I just don't.
No. No.
Understand.
Mm-mm. Now it did raise some eyebrows and people were surprised when Kay showed up with $250,000 engagement ring. Everybody was like, "What is that?" And she's like, "It's my engagement ring." And everybody's like, "That ring wasn't on your finger when you got married, girl. That is not the ring that was on your finger."
Okay.
But most everyone just seemed to assume it was a lottery situation. They just were like, guess he won the lottery. Not one person seemed to suspect that Sandy was stealing the money. And I guess it's also like he's just flaunting it. He's just spending it right in front of your face.
Yeah.
So maybe that makes it like more likely that you're not going to expect that he's stealing it.
That's fair.
But this was also like Sandy Jenkins, you know, he's the nice, quiet, Sandy unassuming, Jenkins. Trustworthy accountant. This guy that remembers your birthdays and your anniversaries. Like, obviously, he's not stealing this money. This went on for years, years. It is almost impossible for me to believe that a fruitcake bakery could even survive for years, losing $100,000 a month, much less That's not crazy. Notice the embezzlement.
But we keep hearing about this. This is what, like, with Rita Crenwell, it's like, how does this tiny town have millions of dollars, you know?
Right. Yeah. Now, the bakery did notice that their profits weren't quite as high as expected during this time, but they also had been in business for so long that they kind of knew the ebbs and flows of business. Mm-hmm. And some years you're on top and some years you're lower. And so they kind of attributed some of it to that. But they started looking at things like the cost of ingredients and the cost of labor. They were blaming the economy. They looked to see if there was a mistake with the payroll. They thought maybe expanding the business into all these locations was the problem because Bob McNutt, when he took over, he had expanded into three new locations. So they thought maybe that was the problem.
They better they not maybe- skimp on the ingredients because of this guy. That's all I'm saying. They better not like, no, you
they
know,
would
start
never.
Using different.
They okay. would never. They have a reputation to uphold quality fruitcakes. No, but people lost their jobs. I mean, they fired people because they had to perform layoffs because they were losing $100,000 a month. That's like right. one person's, that's like two people's salaries every month. That they're losing. So right. yeah, people lost their jobs. And they knew that they were doing something wrong. They just couldn't figure out what it was. They could not figure out where this money was going. They did suspect maybe someone was stealing, but they just weren't looking in the right place. They were looking to see if their ingredients were being stolen. They were like closely watching their inventory, suspecting that maybe someone was stealing the ingredients to nefariously bake fruitcakes on the side, you know?
Make their own and sell them? I know. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing?
They spent years trying to figure out what the problem was. And finally, they just figured it was due to changing perceptions of their biggest seller, the fruitcake. They were blaming, yeah.
Don't you dare blame that fruitcake.
Well, not the fruitcake, people's perceptions of the fruitcake.
Well, that's what I mean.
It was something that they'd been struggling with since the 80s, and it just looked like it was all catching up to them now. Oh, I thought you were saying it's the fruitcake's fault. I wasn't trying to blame the fruitcake. No, it's blaming the people's perceptions. And the thing is, the books were basically backing up this assessment. I mean, they never had an outside auditor come in, which just to me seems kind of crazy. I don't think. That I could be wrong about that, but I don't think that they ever had like an outside auditor look into this. And the books were backing up what they thought. The thing is, Sandy knew exactly how to cover his tracks. Not to mention, he's the only one writing the checks. Like, you know, he has nobody to answer to for that. But he also knew how to cover his tracks. He'd time his checks so that it was when the bakery was stocking up on ingredients and paying like more on postage and that kind of thing. He'd pad those numbers a little bit more. So when the bakery would look into where its money was going, nothing looked unusual there because they were always spending a little more at those times. He even used his own crimes to help him commit more crimes.
Oh my gosh.
Because the bakery couldn't figure out where the money was going and thought it was due to this perception of fruitcake, they started spending more money on marketing. And Sandy would use that as a chance to fudge the numbers to make it look like a legitimate promotional expense. And again, it didn't help that any audit requests came through Sandy, which meant that he was able to manipulate the reports.
It's just so hard because you have to... LOL, I've said this before recently. You have to trust the person that's doing their job because you've entrusted them to do this job. And you have to check in on things. But if they are the expert in that role and they are the one that should be doing X, Y, and Z and they are reporting it to you, yes, you should get an outside auditor. Yes, you should do all those things. But like, it's so hard. You can't like build your whole business around like, and I mean, maybe you have to, but you can't build your whole business around like expecting someone shady to get into this role. Like, I just feel like that's so hard to operate like that.
Well, and the bakery would say at the end, like after all of this came to light, that they don't regret trusting Sandy. Like, that's not something that they regret. But moving forward, they have a trust but verify kind of mentality where we're going to continue being the same people that we were. We're going to continue being the same kind business and we're going to trust people, but we're going to verify. And every business should have things in place where not one person is responsible for writing all the checks and processing all of the claims. Like, those should be two separate people. So the person who's writing the checks should be giving that check to the person who's then paying the vendor or whatever. I mean, I don't know how business works, but I just think if that was two separate roles, then they would know that these voided checks and these like secondary fraudulent checks that he's creating to cover his tracks are obviously not going to a legitimate vendor. Those are not being cashed. It's the voided check that's being cashed.
Right. But you also have to know that somewhere in some company, there is a system like that where there's the two people and both of them are corrupt. Like, it's happening somewhere, you know, like one of them's gone to the other one and been like, hey, I'll cut you into this. You know, like that is also happening somewhere, I'm sure.
You're getting caught a lot faster in that case. I think that's the thing with the Rita Crunwell and the Collins Street Bakery cases. I can't remember the exact statistic, but it's high. It's something like 90% of embezzlement cases within companies are caught within 14 months. Like, that's like the average. It's like 14 months they get caught. Rita Crunwell got away with it for 20 years. Yeah. Sandy Jenkins got away with it for a long time. I mean, we'll talk about how, not 20 years, but quite a long time, and we'll talk about how long. And it's because they don't have those systems in place. If you have two people, then that means two people are in on it.
Yeah.
And somebody's talking.
Somebody
you can't. Two can't keep a secret.
Keep a secret.
Yeah. Only two can keep a secret if one of them is dead.
It's dead.
And that's not to say Sandy was out here committing the perfect crime. Okay, I'm not trying to give this guy all the credit in the world. It was a very simple ruse. But he definitely got sloppy a time or two or three. He almost got caught quite a few times. But as the accountant, anytime anything seemed up with the numbers, they would come to him for an explanation. He would offer to look into it, and then he'd report back and be like, everything's normal. Everything's right with the numbers. And not to mention, okay, it's hard to find the mole when you have no idea who's working against you. Like, there's tons of people that work in this office. Nobody knows who it is.
That's true.
Or even that there is somebody doing something. So,
right. Like, you don't know that something's up.
And, you know, I think that's also why they were wanting it to be the cost of ingredients, the cost of labor. They wanted it to be something like that. They didn't want it to be an employee of theirs that was stealing from them.
Right. Did you say how big this place was? Like, how many people?
I don't know how big it was. I mean, it's not huge. It's just a little bakery. I mean, it's not a little bakery. It's a bigger bakery than your mom and pop bakery. It's like, let's see.
I'm just wondering, like, employee-wise, like, are they trying to see if it's, like, one of, like, 50 people, if it's one of, like, 8, you know?
No, that's a good question. Definitely closer to 50 than 8, I would think.
Yeah.
They have 601 employees.
Wow.
According to Zipia.com. And that's, like, within their 4 locations.
That's a lot.
Yes. So they had about 601 employees, like, today. I'm not exactly sure how many they had then, but it was probably about the same because that was kind of at their height.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they're still growing. But they were making $30 million a year in profit. So.
Yeah. So definitely more than 8.
They definitely had more than 8 employees. I also just think we need to stop blaming victims of embezzlement for not catching on to things quicker. I mean, yes, we can look at mistakes they made so that we can, like, put systems into place to try to prevent somebody from being able to take advantage of a person like that before. But we have got to just stop saying, like, you should have seen this earlier. Because they know, first of all, they already think that. They already wish they had their millions of dollars back. Yeah.
They don't need your "I told you so."
Yeah. And I just think, like, anytime somebody gets taken advantage of because they trusted another person, we don't need to be blaming the person that trusted too much. Because then we're all just walking around jaded. I think, like, it's always education, learning about scams, learning about fraud, learning about embezzlement and how people do these things so that you can know what to watch for and you can put systems in place to prevent it from happening. But, yeah, we've got to stop telling victims of fraud that they should have known. They already know.
That's not helping anybody.
And this is the part that gets me here. Sandy really seemed to want to brag about his new riches, so much so that he would go walk into Bob McNutt's office, Bob McNutt himself, and start telling him about his private jet that he was flying on. Like,
that's where I'm like, you know, something's not. I mean, I know we said don't blame him, but I just feel like you're kind of like, that's weird. How did you?
And also, this is
too nosy. Like, asking.
I think Bob was just like, why would you feel the need to tell me that? Like, I don't know why you felt the need to tell me that. But I think they all just thought he'd won the lottery.
Yeah.
He'd gotten this big inheritance and he's, like, spending all this money.
You're not thinking he's stealing right under your nose and then, like, coming in and telling you about it.
Right. But this is also a person that Sandy barely knew. Like, this is his boss's boss's boss, his supervisor's boss, and like, also is the person that he's stealing from. Like, hey, I just flew on this private jet with your money. Like,
yeah.
And years went by, like 6 years went by, and Sandy and Kay were loving their lives. They had climbed that social ladder. They got too rich for the people from church, who they said still treated them like they were kitchen workers. So they traded them out for new rich friends from Sandy's new rich people wine club and Kay's new rich people book club. They had a rich people book club. It was an exclusive book club. Like, you had to apply to join. And Kay became the treasurer.
Uh-oh. That's a bad idea.
She must have felt like she finally made it. I think this would probably drive me so nuts.
Too.
People make up all this stupid stuff with status and their exclusive clubs, and it makes you want to join it because it's exclusive and you want to be included. And it's all just made up. Like, it's so dumb. But I get it. I mean, I get it.
I want to be in it. I know. Hello, Secret Society.
I want to join your book club. Can I join your book club?
Yeah, okay. Let me do it.
Kay got kicked out. Anyways, they decided to buy a $658,000 home in Santa Fe. And he and Kay would fly their new rich people friends from Corsicana out on their private jet to stay at their new giant house in Santa Fe. They would also take their private jet to Aspen, to Napa, to Martha's Vineyard. They went on something like over 200 private jet flights. Like, they flew private over 200 times in this time period. Sandy was no longer the invisible man. He was getting invited to exclusive parties from companies. People now seemed interested in hearing what he had to say. He was able to have the wardrobe of his dreams without becoming a funeral home director. And he worked hard.
I forgot
about
that part. That was like his dream. Like, okay.
And he worked hard to get hair as smooth and thick as Bill Clinton's.
Okay.
It didn't work, though. He never got hair as smooth and thick as Bill Clinton's, unfortunately.
Side note, when we were in elementary school, I was in either kindergarten or first grade when Bill Clinton was running for president. And we did at school, everyone got to vote and you had to vote. And I obviously was in first grade and I didn't know anything. And I voted for Bill Clinton because I liked his hair. I distinctly remember that. Which, yeah.
That's why JFK won the election.
I'm sure. There's no doubt in my mind.
At one point, Sandy did look into investing in a funeral home, but it never happened for him. Every year, his spending got ludicrously worse. He spent, I mean, these are just a few of the outrageous things he spent. He spent $7,200 on a cell phone. He spent $40,000 on a mattress. $40,000 on a mattress. $40,000. On a mattress.
I would be interested in learning more about that. Like, is his
you better be good? Having the like he... best night of your sleep. I mean,
wait, the best sleep of your life, you mean?
What yeah, did that's say? What I meant. The best night of your sleep is what I said. Yeah. You okay. Better be having the best night of your sleep. He bought $58,000 piano.
Oh.
A Steinway. Okay. A Steinway is a piano, right? The only champagne they would even touch was Cristal and Dom Perignon, which you have to be rich to pronounce correctly. And I am not rich, so don't come for me. Sandy seemed to feel like he'd finally become the person he was always meant to be. Like, he had this person inside of him. This is who he was meant to be. He was meant to have the status, the prestige, the respect.
I love when people do that, because I'm like, if you were meant to be this, don't you think you would have just like... been this.
No, oh, this was to, like, the life he deserved. Nope. This was the life he deserved, Mogab. He deserved it.
Of course.
So he didn't seem at all concerned that it could all go away at any point. He didn't make any moves to leave town. Nothing was ever put in place in case he got caught. It just didn't seem like a possibility to him. This was his real life now. You know, all that time before when he was ignored, when he was forgettable, that wasn't the real Sandy. This is the real Sandy. This rich guy stealing all this money. This is the part that gets Sandy. Me too. There was a quote from one of the Jenkins neighbors in the Texas Monthly article. It's so true. He was stealing nearly $100,000 a month, right, at this time. If he had, this neighbor's like, if he had just taken that money and maybe like maybe did that a few times, steal the $100,000 a few times. Then instead of spending it on private planes to Santa Fe and expensive jewelry, if you like invested that, he could have made that money back, paid it back without anybody ever noticing, and then continued just earning money for years with no one ever noticing.
Why is no one doing that? Is someone doing that?
Just invest it. Because you're not doing this if you don't want to spend it immediately. Like, yeah, you're just not. True.
If you've got, like, no, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there were always a lot of questions.
Wait a second. I could do that. Just kidding.
I know. I'm like, who can I embezzle from for just a, for just a little bit? I'm just trying to
pulling out of our Patreon right now. Everyone, decline. Remove.
There were always a lot of questions about how much of this Kay knew. Like, was she in on this whole scheme or was she falling for Sandy's lies about this inheritance? And it seems like Sandy wasn't telling Kay exactly what he was doing. He wasn't like, this is my exact process. In fact, he did come up with some story about how the money was from those clients where he said he got the Lexus from.
Yeah.
Which is obviously stupid and not true. But he told Kay not to go around telling people how generous they were, you know.
Oh.
I don't know if Kay convinced herself that story was true so she could continue to have this fun and opulent lifestyle. Yeah, I really don't think she cared. Yeah. She quit her job almost from the very beginning. Like, as soon as Sandy cashed that first check, her job was gone.
Where did she work again?
I don't know. I think she, like, I know she ran, like, a catering business on the side at one point.
Oh, that's hard work. Really, she definitely quit in that.
Yeah. And she, I think the thing is, she knew the money was stolen for sure. There was no way she did not know the money was stolen, especially since Sandy's telling everybody he's flying on this private jet because of his rich cousin is loaning it to him. As his wife, she would have known he doesn't have a rich cousin. Like, she knows that's a lie. Yeah. She knows the money is stolen. She's probably encouraging him at this point so that she can stay treasurer of her rich people book club. And she wanted that status just as much as him.
Listen, he's like having this diamond ring.
Yes.
Yeah, she got that diamond ring and she was like asking no questions. She not worried about
no
it.
No questions.
She not worried about
no.
it.
No. And like really expensive cars all the time, new cars. And so obviously this is a precarious house of cards that was just one tiny little puff from collapsing on top of them. And that tiny little puff, just like that, that happened on Thursday, June 20th, 2013.
Oh, dang.
That's 9 years. 9 years.
Yeah. Dang.
Like I said, the typical occupational embezzlement scheme lasts 14 months before it's detected. Sandy got away with this for 9 years.
9 years.
But anyway, on that day, another accountant at the bakery named Symmetric Walker stopped by Sandy's office. And Symmetric was a newer hire. She'd been with the bakery like 2 years. But that morning, she'd been going through the bank statements and she saw a check made out to Capital One. And this was very concerning to her because the bakery had no business with Capital One. They didn't have any accounts or credit cards with Capital One.
That's where you mess up too. You can't take it outside of like what you're already working with.
So this part cracks me up because it's like, you know how there's like corporate speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Symmetric used her best like corporate speak for is going on here. Yeah. She said, Sandy, there's a discrepancy with this check. Can you help me understand this?
Oh, yeah. Ask a question. I want to learn more.
Can you help me understand the discrepancy on this check? You thieving thief.
Yeah, you sketchy sketchball.
You sketchy sketchball. The look on Sandy's face told her everything she needed to know.
Oh.
All he actually said was, I'll fix it. Sandy was actually going out that afternoon to look for a new house in a more upscale neighborhood to suit his new lifestyle. And while he was gone, Symmetric decided to take the opportunity to do some snooping. She didn't want to alert their supervisor yet. His name was Scott Holloman, because she knew Scott was actually good friends with the Jenkinses. He spent a lot of time with them socially. So she didn't want to, like, tell him until she, like, had some more firm proof. She wanted to know that she had something before she looped him in.
Well, because it's about to blow up.
Yeah. So she started by just looking through the system. And she caught on to Sandy's game almost immediately. Because he always did the same thing with these voided checks. All it took was her looking through all the past voided checks. And right away, this day, she found 11 discrepancies that totaled about $400,000.
Oh my God, you're just like shitting yourself, right? Like,
you're shitting yourself. This is Sandy Jenkins. This is like your boss. Like, this is like, you know.
Like you're freaking out, right?
You're freaking out. And she's young. And she's like probably the only person of color in this entire bakery. And she's like, ah. And she's like, do other people know about this? If I bring it to this other guy's attention. What if it goes beyond
like
Sandy?
The whole company, right? Like, what if it's like something shady that the company is doing? You know, you don't know. Like,
right. But this paper trail was solid. It led right back to Sandy. So that's when she decided to that she had enough to bring in Scott, and he alerted the other executives to the embezzlement. And when they told Bob McNutt that it looked like they'd found Sandy Jenkins embezzling money, Bob said, "Well, that explains a lot."
McNutt. That's a very McNutt response.
Yeah, McNutty. And this initial investigation was just the tip of the iceberg. That $400,000 was nothing. Nothing compared to what he had done.
Oh, no.
And soon they would know the full story, which was that Jenkins had stolen $114,342 in cash and in checks. The full amount over these 9 years. That was just cash. The full amount in checks over these 9 years from a fruitcake bakery was $16,649,786.
What are you doing? What are you doing with that?
That is like $17 million. From a fruitcake bakery in Corsicana, Texas. Mogab, what are we doing with our lives?
I know. We need to go
$17 million, they barely noticed. Like, thank God they're the Dom Perignon of fruitcakes and they've been around for over 100 years because a younger company would probably have been crippled by this amount of embezzlement. Like, most businesses, most bakeries would probably not have been able to survive.
I mean, name like any other small, like family started owned company like that.
Sarah Lee.
Like, La Madeleine.
Sarah Lee could probably have lasted. La Madeleine's not going down.
Yeah, that would have brought La Madeleine to its knees, honestly. Like Panera's not surviving that, right?
Could you imagine just finding this out? Like, oh my God, $17 million.
Like, that's your worst day at work, right? Like, that's your worst day.
Or your best day because you, like, finally know and, like, where the money's been going. Action. And you're like, oh, it's not actually people hating fruitcake. Like, we're actually doing pretty good.
Yeah, like, the next day, once you fire him, are you just, like, feeling flush with cash? Probably not.
You must. So, okay, so let's talk about the next day. So the next day, Sandy shows up for work. He has no idea that everybody knows his scheme. Mm-hmm. And Scott confronted him with copies of the voided checks. And Sandy tried to play dumb at first. Like, he was pretending like he didn't know what those checks were.
Yeah.
And this just pissed Scott off. He was, like, furious. I mean, I just can't imagine, like, the level of betrayal you feel when somebody's done that. I mean, it even wasn't to him. You know, it's the company. But this is somebody that he thought was his friend. He knows that he's lying right to his face. So he just asked him straight up, did you write these checks?
Yeah.
And Sandy just said, I write the checks for the bakery.
Oh.
Obviously, he was immediately fired. The bakery canceled his credit cards. They changed the locks on the bakery so that he couldn't get back in. They sent a sheriff's deputy out to collect his keys. As soon as he left the bakery that morning, he ran home and just started throwing random stuff into grocery bags. Like, anything valuable that he could easily grab, like gold bars that he kept around the house.
Gold watches. I want to see. I need to see one of those in real life.
A gold bar?
Yeah. Like, why? Why do we have those? What are we doing with those?
Because they are recession proof. They're going to keep their value unlike that dollar bill that you have, you know?
Yeah.
He even got up into his hiding spot in the air vent to grab some jewels that he kept there.
Jewels.
And then he and Kay got in one of his fancy cars bought with stolen money, and they drove up to Austin. To Austin. That's where they go. They've just gotten caught stealing $17 million. Do they take a PJ over to Panama?
No. Nope.
Sure don't. Drive to Austin.
Sure don't.
Their daughter.
Sure yeah, don't.
Their daughter was living there at the time. So they go to drop off these valuables at her house. Then they take off to Santa Fe to kind of regroup and figure out what their next steps are going to be. He thought about burying some of the money somewhere. He thought about putting it in offshore accounts. From Santa Fe, he and Kay came back to Austin, where he noticed that he was being tailed. And so he went down to Town Lake to Lady Bird Lake. So he went and got this stash of valuables from his daughter, poured it all into a Whole Foods shopping bag, drove out to Lady Bird Lake in Austin, which is like downtown Austin, and just started like throwing it around the lake, just like scattering it in bushes, behind trees.
You're going to jail forever. So what do you, I mean, at least.
Do you think you're coming back for it?
Yeah.
Or do you think no one else is going to find it? Are you hiding this to come back for it at some point? Or are you doing this so that nobody finds this stuff, so that it can't be traced to you? But the thing with that is, it's not like they emptied their house. Like, he didn't take everything. He like went into a safe and took like some of the watches and left a lot of the watches and some pretty important paperwork behind.
You're flying on PJs. Like, you got to not worry about the necklace, you know?
Right. Or the gold bars.
Yeah.
I think this is like what tells me, like, I don't know. I don't know what it tells me. When he couldn't think of where else to hide all this stuff, he just threw the rest of it in the lake.
Like, that's so stupid. This whole thing is
stupid. I think it's like he didn't know what else to do. This was not a plan. This was not a thought out plan of his. I don't think he had any idea of what he should be doing in this situation.
This boy is panicked.
He's panicked. He is absolutely panicked. Meanwhile, the whole town of Corsicana was on absolute fire with this juicy piece of gossip. This was exciting stuff. This was probably the most exciting thing to happen in Corsicana in a long time. Everyone was talking.
And to
the fruitcake
company.
Everyone was talking about it. Nobody could believe it. Rumors were flying. Everyone had a theory about why Sandy had done it. Some thought he wanted to be a big shot and he could appear generous by getting into philanthropy, which he also had done because he was a rich person. And what do rich people do? Philanthropy.
Yeah.
But Symmetric Walker thought it was to get back at Bob McNutt because Bob had everything that Sandy wanted. People debated about his mental state, if maybe his manic depression could explain all of this.
Mm.
But most people thought Sandy just wanted to fit into Corsicana high society. He wanted status. I don't think Sandy wanted to get back at Bob McNutt, like Symmetric thought. I think he wanted to be Bob McNutt. I think he admired him.
Oh.
I think he held him in very high regard. And I think he wanted his
life.
Yeah. But the people in town still didn't know the full extent of Sandy's fraud. It wasn't until a month later when the FBI pulled up to the Jenkins house and they started towing cars and like hauling stuff out of the house. This was like Christmas in Corsicana. Literally, people came out to stand in front of the house or even like park their cars and watch all of this go down.
I'm sure.
The funniest line in this whole article in Texas Monthly is one guy talking about calling his mom. He like gives his mom a call and she's like, I can't talk right now. I'm watching the house.
Oh, no.
And just hung up the phone.
I'm
watching the house.
People know exactly what that means.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm watching the house.
She didn't have to.
They were all calling their friends. They were updating them on what was happening at the house. Oh, they're towing the Lexus. Oh, they're taking the furs. Oh, they got a lot of wine. two Louis Vuitton steamer trunks.
Oh my gosh.
Sandy and Kay came back to Corsicana, which seems like a weird move. Yeah. Seems like a weird move.
Definitely a weird move.
The FBI had changed the locks on the house, so they had to break into her own house. I don't really think they had any idea what to do next. But Sandy didn't have long to think about it, because pretty soon after, all those valuables that he'd tossed around Lady Bird Lake, they were being discovered one by one by, like, random people at the park and even some local law enforcement. They had a dive team recover the rest of what he had thrown in the lake, and they were able to match all the serial numbers on the items to Sandy Jenkins. So putting that with all the stuff confiscated from the house.
Yeah, I'm saying.
On August 12th. You caught. On August 12th, 2013, the FBI came a-knockin', and Sandy was arrested and charged with 10 counts of mail fraud. It's the mail fraud. It gets you every time.
And I should have known better when I made that joke at the post office about the stamp, and that guy was like, it's not a joke. And I was like, okay. And now I'm like, it's definitely not a joke.
No. You'll get more time for mail fraud than murder.
I know. Not a joke.
3 counts of money laundering and other charges like conspiracy to commit money laundering, aiding and abetting, making false statements to a financial institution. Meanwhile, Kay is on full-on damage control. Not with the police.
Oh, no.
With the high society of Corsicana.
She doesn't care about that. No. Yeah.
She is busy trying to get everyone in Corsicana to believe that she had known nothing about what Sandy had been doing. She was shocked when she found out. Shocked. She was even more shocked when her new high society friends didn't seem to want to have anything to do with her anymore. They kicked her out of the book club. She was not treasurer anymore.
Well, obviously.
And then it took about 7 or 8 months, but eventually Kay was also indicted on similar charges. They held an estate sale at the Jenkins house.
Oh, yeah.
And when I tell you the whole town showed up, I would have been there 100%.
Oh, duh.
They were lining up hours before the doors even opened, and the organizers had to just let like a few people in at a time. People could not believe all the stuff the Jenkins had accumulated.
I mean, I bet people are buying that, but I bet people are going even if they have no money.
They just want to see. Yeah. I think everybody wants a little souvenir, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
They had designer everything. I mean, there's Cartier, Louis Vuitton, Balenciaga, and what the Sun called, quote, a frighteningly large Hummel figurine collection. They're like those little figurines of the little kids, you know?
You mean this right here?
Yep. Sure do. Frighteningly large collection of those, you crazy person. Yikes.
That's so funny.
One noticeable person at the estate sale was Bob McNutt himself, who really, really wanted his $17 million back.
Is he like, this all belongs to me?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's why they're doing this estate sale, is to try to recoup some of this money. He'd even had let me give you a little idea then. Before this estate sale, he had a guy go around the yard with a metal detector to see like what else he could find, if maybe Sandy had buried something in the yard. Yeah, but he didn't find anything. So this was like their last resort, was this estate sale. Bob turned it into a little party, this estate sale. He was serving treats from the bakery to the people waiting in line. He was talking up all the watches and furs they'd find when they got into the house. He was like hoping people would spend a lot of money, you know? They ended up recovering like $4 million from this estate sale. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. They said in their article on the Collins Street Bakery that the rest was never recovered. So I wonder if that $4 million, it must have included like the properties and the cars and all that stuff that had been like seized as evidence.
Oh, yeah. Not just also the like garage sale, basically.
Hey, if you're going to speak, could you stop digging into the ice?
Okay.
I can cut the ice out, but I can't cut the ice out over you talking.
I just want this one last piece here.
Okay. There you go. So I wonder if that $4 million included like the properties and the cars and like all that other stuff that had been seized as evidence.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Sandy did try his best to keep Kay out of all this or at least minimize her involvement. But unfortunately, he'd sent her emails that said things like, "Remember, you never knew anything."
Yeah.
Which like really didn't help her case.
Yeah. Weird. Like, I just, every time I'm like, y'all, the call is recorded. Or, hey, it's they're going to subpoena your email.
Come on. Like,
you know what I mean? Oh, but I deleted the text. You idiots. This doesn't work that way.
Right. Well, she ended up only getting like 5 years of probation. So she, wow. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that taught her a lesson. Not.
Yeah, well, listen to this, because in May of 2014, Sandy ended up pleading guilty to one count of mail fraud, one count of conspiracy to commit money laundering, and one count of making a false statement to a financial institution. Plus, he agreed to pay full restitution to the bakery. And at the sentencing hearing, the prosecutor, Nicholas Bunch, produced evidence of the list of expenses for the Jenkins, which the Collins Street Bakery called scandalous and flooring. They were floored. It included over 223 trips on their private jet and other travel expenses that totaled over $3.3 million. It also included,
that's insane,
38 vehicles, $11 million on a black Amex, $1.2 million at Neiman Marcus. They literally
said,
wait,
how much was on the Amex?
$11 million.
How do you even do that?
Could you imagine being like, $11 million in credit card debt?
No. Like, I don't
like your
even
monthly
know.
Payment is like $100,000. I don't know.
Yeah. What?
And they literally brought this up at sentencing. The government made the statement that the only reason the Jenkins stopped shopping at Neiman's was because they ran out of things to sell them. Sandy got 10 years in prison for this. And the article said it, and I was thinking it. And a lot of people probably are thinking it, that maybe 10 years in prison isn't a bad price to pay for 10 years of living the decadent, indulgent, rich people fantasy life.
I'm thinking that prison's probably where you want to be, because when you get out, you got to figure out that $11 million of credit card debt. So I'd be like, you know what? I'm just going to move in here.
I'd just be filing bankruptcy.
I'm going to renew my lease at this
right. Cell. Collins Street Bakery was very quiet about this whole situation for a long time. I think they were very embarrassed. I think victims of embezzlement are always very embarrassed. But they finally broke their silence with the documentary that I couldn't watch called Fruitcake Fraud. And they did have a really interesting article on their website about it. And they said something that I thought was interesting. When they were trying to explain their side of things and why they never suspected Sandy, they said that victims of embezzlement aren't bad people. Or stupid people, really. They just might be a tad too trusting. And they talked about how Corsicana is a trusting community and that people may call it naivety, but they just thought that Sandy was a person worthy of trust. They said, quote, "We don't regret trusting Sandy, but it has led us to modifying our credo. Start with the trust and then double check." Basically,
verify.
Trust but verify. Yep. And that is the story of the Collins Street Bakery embezzlement fraud.
Wow.
Right?
Fraud stories always get me these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. On another note, in eighth grade, we had to make these clay, like, figurines or, like, molds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You could, like, make whatever you wanted. And I think, actually, it was sixth grade. And I made this weird monster-looking thing. And then I put, like, little dots on them. Anyways, I gave it to my mom as a gift. It is hideous. She still displays it at our house. And I named it Freddy Fruitcake. And I am going to ask her to send me a picture of it so I can share it with the people. But it's like a it's like a fruitcake monster.
Oh, my God. I have to see it. A fruitcake monster.
A Freddy Fruitcake. Also, speaking of fruitcakes, which one of these did you order? Because I'm trying to figure out the difference
between...
But what's the difference between the deluxe and the sprinkle top deluxe? I've read the descriptions. Did yours have the pecans, like, all laid out around?
I did not get the sprinkle time. Mm-hmm. I got their original deluxe. Their sprinkled top is new. I wasn't going to go for some newfangled thing. I wanted the original.
Well, I think the only difference is these pecans are like sprinkled, where yours are in a row, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I'm definitely ordering me one of these. Okay, this is what it has. Crunchy pecans, hand-picked pineapple, ripe cherries, golden raisins, lush papaya, and honey.
Mmm.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I might bring this. Oh, wait. They have fruitcake petites?
Yeah, that's I wish I'd cool. seen that, honestly. All right. It's time for some shout-outs. Shout-out time. Are you going to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'm pulling it up. Shout-out to me for ordering fruitcake right now, though, that I'm not going to have to share with anybody because
what?
He doesn't like it. Because
Russell does not want it.
He has no taste. Okay, I will get us started. Man, we've got to scroll so far. Ooh, yes, I'll start us because we've got Kaylee from Chicago, which I like saying it, Chicago.
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 Kaylee. Thank you. I want to go to Chicago so bad. I want to have like my full Ferris Bueller day. And I have never... Chicago's probably like the only city.
Wait, you've
city.
Never been?
I've never been to Chicago. It's like the only city
that's
left.
That's so weird to me.
I know. I yeah. agree. I've never been and
I'm just book yourself a ticket. It's like maybe 90 bucks maybe round trip from maybe Houston. Just go.
Kaylee,
by yourself.
Where should I stay? Tell me where to stay. And I'm just gonna,
Kaylee's going to say stay with her. So
I'm just going to say book myself a little excursion up to Chicago.
Brunch.
Have my Ferris Bueller day. I want to put my forehead on that window. I want to sit in front of that painting. I want to be in a parade.
That okay. Probably,
that, I mean, that last part won't happen. I'll go to a Cubs game, even though I really don't like baseball, but I'm going to pretend to be
on.
Somebody fancy to get into a...
To Katie. No one wants to hear about how you don't care about baseball.
Katie Hall, thank you so much. And I love her little... P.S.
Yeah, it's so long. Read it to me really fast.
Okay. P.S. Adore y'all's podcast. Kristen is amazing at telling these stories, and y'all are so considerate of the victims of these crimes. Y'all sound like two of the sweetest people. Thank y'all for what y'all do.
Thanks so much, Katie. But Kristen, I'm not you specifically. I'm talking about myself in this too. Like, is that how you would categorize us?
Yeah. I think we're really sweet.
Okay.
I think we like want to be...
Okay, cute.
I think we like want to be badasses in our Slytherin reputation eras, but we are little fruitcakes. We're little cupcakes.
Little fruitcakes.
We just care too damn much about other people. It's annoying.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Have you seen that quote from New Girl where Jess is talking to Schmidt and she's like, "What?" She's like, "Don't you care what people think?" And Schmidt's like, "No, do you?" And she's like, "Yes." And he's like, "What? You just go around all day like caring about what other people think? How do you get anything done?" And she's like, "It's hard."
Yes. I guess.
I think that pretty much sums us up. All right, you're up.
Major shouts to Alicia, like Alicia Keys, Calhoun, like the 7th vice president of the
Or the city.
Oh, or the city.
I don't know the vice president or the city, but I know how to say Calhoun.
But I do know Noah Calhoun from The Notebook. Oh. Noah Calhoun. I know that.
I didn't know that either. I saw The Notebook once and wanted to die and was like, I'm never watching this again.
Oh my gosh, everything. From fruitcake to baseball to The Notebook. Kristen's hot takes, everybody. Never going to get through these shout outs.
Major thanks to Libby and Olive. Oh my gosh, Olive. Ah,
oh my gosh.
It reminds me of Olive from Easy A, which is like one of my favorite movies of all time.
I know. I do love that. Wait, Olive? I read that as Olivia at first and I love Olive so much.
I know. Olive. Libby and Olive.
What was that scene Thank in you Easy so A much. Where she's like, "Really? Another Coke Zero?" So-and-so had a Coke Zero again. Get. I don't know. Anyways, it's one of my favorites.
I just remember, I got a pocket of the sunshine.
You know what? I might rewatch that movie. That's a good
one. It used to be one of three movies that I had downloaded on my laptop. Like, I had bought them. It was that, The Duff, and Veronica Mars.
I never saw that.
They're all
Veronica
great.
Mars also, the movie was the Kickstarter thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or that was the series mm-hmm. redo.
The movie. Oh, okay. The movie was the Kickstarter. Yeah. The series redo was the slap in the face.
Yeah, I know. You okay. Move. Yeah. Again.
Moving on.
Moving on. Last but not least, we love, love, love Lauren Lambert. Maybe Lauren? Oh, it's just Lauren. Lauren Lambert.
Lauren
she
Lambert.
She also sounds like a country singer. Like Miranda Lambert.
Like Miranda Lambert.
But Lauren less Lambert. Honky-tonk.
But with alliteration, which is always good. Lauren
yeah,
Lambert.
Better.
Man, I want that alliteration.
Sponsored by Lauren Lambert.
That's all there we that go. We have for you today. I really hope you liked this episode. I had so much fun researching this and telling it to you. If you want to support the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Creepers Pod or join our Facebook discussion group, the True Crime Creepers discussion group. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/truecrimecreepers, and sometimes we post on Twitter. So also make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you will be notified as soon as our next episode drops when I'll tell Mogab another wild story.
Wild. Bye, peeps and creeps.